Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, Tim and I have a guest who has been featured before in the Paracast. He is Mark Olley. And he was born, he was telling us, near where the Beatles did their stuff. Is that right, Mark?
Absolutely. I'm only 16 miles down the road from Paul McCartney and John Lennon's house and the cavern and all that sort of thing. The River Mersey that they sang about is flowing just across the bottom of my street here.
Ferry across the Mersey and all that stuff.
That's it. All the Mersey Beach stuff.
Yeah. We can talk about that some other time, maybe on After the Paracast, but right now, since you have been exploring the UFO conundrum for so many years, what's your take on the things that are happening here in the colonies as far as disclosure?
Well, I've been following it, for sure, as have a lot of people with an interest in ufology. Do you know, in some ways, it doesn't come as a surprise that it hasn't gone to full disclosure. You know, it was kind of inevitable that, you know, we all got excited and somebody somewhere down the line was bound to scupper it, I think, which is a shame. A lot of the books and publications and articles and things that have come out in the last year have certainly been moving towards disclosure as an end aim. I would certainly hope the book that I've just written assists in that process. And it'd be nice to actually know. Do you know what? Come back to me and ask me about what we're up to, because we're up to stuff. So when we get to the end, just make a note to pop back and ask me what we're up to, because we're knocking on a few doors, and I think I might be able to tell you a little bit more about it. There you go. That was really mysterious, wasn't it? That's a lost leader to keep people listening. You know, they'll have to listen to the end now if they want to know what that was all about.
So this is bait and switch?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's an element of that going on. You know, all I can say is that the book that I produced is very much a show and tell, and it's got all the information in it that we have absolutely up to date, so I won't spoil the story or how we got there. But all I can say is we're aiming to push it even further. We're going further than the printed word in the hope that we will get a response, certainly a response in the UK. But I was only chatting to the publisher today that it may have consequences across the pond where you are, so we shall see. I'm not holding my breath because, you know, as we've found out, anything can happen. Yeah, just we'll flow naturally into that later on, because I'm sure you're going to ask me quite a bit about the end of the book, and I'll let you know a bit more information when we do.
Well, I'd be interested in knowing about that, what's going on with all this stuff, because it is so strange trying to deal with this. It's almost insane, which is a commercial they used to have in New York where they had this dealer, and they said his prices are insane.
Certainly insanely frustrating. It really is that we're not, you know, getting further with it. It really is frustrating. And there's been a few whistleblowers. It's been an interesting case. I'm sure the listeners will have followed how things have progressed. But sadly, without a conclusion.
In passing, have you followed all the odyssey of David Grush?
Not in great detail. I'll be honest with you. At the moment, I've delved and dove and fallen into the process of writing the next book, and it's generating. I think it's going to generate two books, so I can confidently say it's going to be a bit of a long haul. I'm doing a sort of a short, punchy book, about sort of practical day-to-day living on this magical planet Earth and ways that you can certainly improve your existence here, which I think is something that is very necessary after the years we've been through. And then having finished the book on King Arthur, which took me 45 years to finish and get into print, there's another one very similar to that, which at the moment has the working title Keys to the Temple. And that one is beginning to rise to prominence, and that's going to take certainly 12 to 24 months to get that into a publishable condition. So, yeah, I've been really quite preoccupied doing that. I only really see what wanders across my my digital desk.
Well, let's go from there into something that probably interests a lot of us here. Mm. And what it means is we have had a legendary sighting here in the States that everybody talks about and hates talking about it. Mm. And that, of course, is the R word, Roswell.
Yeah, which in fact is the nearest major town to the crash site, because, of course, the crash took place at a place called Corona. But it just doesn't sound quite as snappy as Roswell, which is one of the similarities to the story that's in my book, Europe's Roswell, 40 Years Since Impact, in a sense that that particular UFO, or UFOs plural, that came down in the desert in New Mexico, came down in a very lightly inhabited area. And so they were struggling a bit to give it a proper location. And the same thing has happened here. Wales, as a part of the British Isles, is quite sparsely populated. And this incident that I record is very similar. The little sleepy village of Clonillard, just outside Aberystwyth in mid Wales, where this happened, is equally obscure. And the valley that this thing came down in was a mile or two further away from the village. So, yes, I'm afraid we have drifted into the R word.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. And you have a particular take on the R word.
Roswell. I do have a take on it. 1947, something definitely came down. And at the moment, it's kind of, 50-50 as to what happened there, in terms of was it one of ours? Was it one of theirs? Or was it something that was back-engineered? And again, that's a similarity to Europe's Roswell, the one we have over here. We've got the same questions arising. Where did that thing come from? And should it have actually been flying around in the first place, whatever it was? The technology is certainly miles ahead of anything that was known at that time. So it does raise important questions. One of the biggest differences is, of course, at Roswell you have tales of flying discs with alien bodies hanging out. We don't have that over here. Whatever it was that came down in Wales flew off, having scattered a lot of debris over four fairly large, substantial fields. So we're dealing with a craft here that can be quite badly damaged and still fly, whereas the ones at Roswell, New Mexico, of course, were damaged beyond their ability to fly. Although some people think that they have been, resurrected, as it were, and that they, have created a generation of craft that perhaps can fly now. Maybe that's, what we're seeing here is a result of what took place over in Roswell. There's some incredible similarities, huge similarities, which we can go into as we go along, if you wish.
Well, one interesting thing about the R word, as it's affectionately known, is that I have this crazy theory about all this, which is that nobody has the crashed ship, because E.T., seeing that their technology may be getting into the hands of primitive beings, came down and took the wreckage away, but of course they can't reveal that. That would be the biggest secret of all. That's why we don't have any wreckage. It's gone because he took it back. I mean, think what we would do, Mark, if one of our craft visited a foreign country and crash landed. It's a military craft. We want to recover it if we could or destroy it. More to come with Mark, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to produce an endless supply of nano-sized silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. Silver Lung. With the addition of our unique lung delivery system, respiratory infections are targeted directly, where traditional oral administration simply cannot reach. This pioneering method also preserves the original particle sizes and delivers your silver solution directly into the bloodstream. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
Most folks don't realize this fact. Our country is only 4 missed meals away from chaos, and those meals can vanish fast. In a national emergency, fragile supply chains break down and will wipe grocery store shelves clean in a matter of hours. Before this happens, there's something you should do today. Let's stock up on emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply is the company millions of American families trust for their emergency supplies. You should, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each kit contains delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and other survival necessities. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship the same day, fast. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. Those who know what's coming, prepare before the chaos starts. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid, too, even if they've applied in the past. Enrollment is always open. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Shortly, we'll be referring to Heroes Roswell with Mark Olley, the author of the book about it. Right now, we're talking about the other Roswell. And my suggestion is that maybe something alien did crash there, but E.T. picked it up. Or they blew it up. I mean, I just don't see why they would want us to get their technology if they're not overtly giving it to us.
There's a few observations. The first one is that there's quite a good book that was written in the 1990s called Crash at Corona, and that goes into the point that there were two impacts. Now, whether it's the same ship that bounced, it could be the same, the issue in the book is whether it's the same craft, the same ship that hit the desert and bounced like a stone going across water and finished up at another location, so there are two crash sites, or whether or not it was an aerial impact between two vehicles that resulted in two alien craft coming down. That's probably the first observation. The second observation, again from the 1990s, was that, of course, National Geographic sent a group of archaeologists out there to see what they could find, something close to my heart, obviously, because I'm an archaeologist, and they found little beads of metal still in the sand, melted beads of metal. So whatever it was that was there, and then was somewhere else. Now, the somewhere else issue, I think that's probably covered by 1,000 apocryphal tales of, you know, these craft turning up in a hangar somewhere, you know, military air base or whatever. And I've got the same thing over here. There's just in passing, I mention an interesting story in the book. A friend of mine joined the army as a computer programmer. So, of course, as a trainee, he's given access to a military terminal. It's a bit of a funny story as well, because obviously he sat there in his lunch break thinking, oh, what can I do? You know, I've got access to this military whatever. So he goes, dives on the internet, does his programming, because he's a very, very good hacker, he was. And he tried to get into the Vatican website. Anyway, it didn't last long. He only lasted about 30 seconds. So he thought, what else can I do? I know what. I'll go and see if they've got any UFOs. So he actually went on a military terminal on the military network and had a look. And he came up with one in a hangar somewhere in the UK down south. So clearly we have them. Either, like I say, they're one of theirs, one of ours, or something that's been back-engineered, but clearly they exist. And I would take this guy's word as, you know, fairly gospel, because he kind of shared things with me. He shared this as something he was quite shocked about and surprised by, and he shared it, you know, probably the week after he'd actually done it. But that's not uncommon. I have had, over the years, many people have shared similar stories, and I'm fairly positive anybody in ufology will have run across pretty much the same tale from a number of sources, but he was fairly reliable, so I'm going to stick my neck out and say I think we've almost certainly got something. It certainly physically exists, it's physically there. I'm in several minds as to where it comes from. I'm gonna chuck a theory in of my own, because this is quite interesting, because a lot of people have said, where are these things coming from? Well, what I do note, and what I have noticed over the years, is what I call the Star Trek effect. Now, the Star Trek effect is when the aliens are budget, so you can't create anything beyond one head, two eyes, a mouth, two arms, a body, two legs, you know, two hands, two feet. Now, a vast majority of the aliens, even the ones that, you know, look a bit odd, are conforming to that structure. And again, I think another piece in the jigsaw puzzle are these enormous stretched heads, these big stretched skulls that you find, things like the Paracas had. Clearly there were species of human beings living in the distant past that were vastly more intelligent than us. I think anybody that watches Ancient Aliens will have realised that by now. If you were going to do some kind of interdimensional jumping around or whatever, I'm not sure what we're seeing are things from other planets. I don't think they've, you know, jumped in a wormhole in Alpha Centauri and, you know, decided to, you know, come and steal a cow in Texas. I don't think that's what we're seeing here at all. I think what's happening, you can't have people coming back in time from the future, because that's going to cause a paradox. That's a well-known effect where you could screw up your own future and then cease to exist. So they're certainly not going to take that kind of risk and make themselves known as much as they are. But it would be no problem at all for them to travel forward in time from the past, because it doesn't affect them. And then when they arrive, they want to know what's going on. So that neatly explains in one hit why they're taking things like cows and sheep and goats and goodness knows what else. I mean, if they were abducting badgers and squirrels, nobody would notice. But of course, they're taking people as well. So they want to have a look at the environment and see what's going on. And it would also neatly explain why they are the way they are, why they appear as they do. You know, it ticks all the boxes. So, you know, I'm going to go with that. I almost certainly think the time travelers, you know, they've cracked the problems of time and space at some point in the distant past. I mean, even human beings, you know, there's been people who've been able to see the future. So clearly we're dealing with a timeline. And they managed to sort that out. They've managed to crack that as a problem. And I think they're traveling forward in time. So for them, time and space, dimensions, all that doesn't really exist. They can go wherever they like. But I certainly don't think they're coming from the future, and I'm not 100% sure they're aliens. Gosh, we got a lot out of that observation, didn't we?
Yeah. Yes, they sure did. I was going to bring up one thing, because we talked about this to others, that there may be alternatives to this paradox, the grandfather paradox, when it comes to time travel, you know, changing the past in some way. One of which is that whatever happens was meant to be. The other is that the change begets another reality, another dimension. So the original dimension remains unchanged. At least a couple of theories there.
Yeah, I'm open to all suggestions. It still doesn't really explain why, you know, an alien would travel hundreds of millions of miles in a super advanced ship and steal a cow. I think there's another game being played here. There's another set of things going on, which I think are environmental. So I'm only sort of looking for the theory that sort of ticks the most boxes. I mean, who knows? Like you say, they could be, you know, doing something to deliberately orchestrate a change in the future. That's possible. But there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever that the number of sightings we're having and things that are going on are significantly altering what's happening as we move forward in our timeline. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. But like you say, whether they're playing with safe ground because they know they're just doing what they're supposed to do, or whether it's something else, you know, that is a possibility. I just don't feel it ticks as many boxes, but, you know, you're right, you're absolutely right. There are other ideas out there. But that's just the one I'm going with.
Yeah, I always did think that it was odd that the majority of occupant seen in association with UFO landings always tend to be humanoid.
Well, some people think we're human, but of course we'll correct them. Mark Ali, Gene Steinberg, Tim Swartz, you're in
the Pedicast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
The Silver Lungs Generator is the only all-encompassing professional class product for producing endless colloidal and ionic silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. With recent regulations threatening the sale of silver-based supplements, now you can secure yourself and your family by producing your own silver solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of silver anytime, anywhere, for any application. The Silver Lungs Generator is a one-time purchase that requires no maintenance nor replacement parts for the life of the unit. This product was designed to be an invaluable part of your vital preparations. For a detailed report on the differences between ionic silver, colloidal silver, and what most silver solution manufacturers are producing, please visit our website at www.silverlungs.com for more information on why you should be producing your own silver solutions right from your home forever.
You are
USA News update. The Supreme Court has opted not to address, at least for now, a case regarding whether Donald Trump has immunity from prosecution for alleged crimes committed during his presidency. On Friday, the High Court rejected a request from federal special counsel Jack Smith to expedite the proceedings connected to Trump's purported efforts to overturn the 2020 election. This decision implies a growing possibility that Trump's federal trial might not reach a conclusion before the 2024 election. Medical professionals advise exercising caution as families gather for the holidays.
Dr. Marina Kellner from Westchester Medical Center highlights the increasing numbers of COVID cases, along with a surge in flu and the respiratory virus RSV. COVID hospitalizations in New York State alone have shown a steady rise, with over 2,200 reported this week compared to 1,200 during the Thanksgiving holiday period. I'm John Schaefer.
Skip Kelly, USA News.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
Let me tell you a story about Bill. Bill was a normal guy in his 50s. He had back surgery about 2 years ago. Bill was in a lot of pain. He dealt with his pain by taking the Percocets his doctor prescribed for him. Bill took more and more and more of them to help with the pain, until one day the prescriptions weren't enough to get rid of Bill's pain. Then one day Bill found someone to help him get rid of the pain with illegal drugs he didn't need a prescription for. Fast forward to today. Bill lost his job and his family. The only thing he does have is his drug dealer. If you know Bill's story and you don't want to end up like Bill, call the Detox and Treatment Helpline right now to get away and get treatment.
800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. Call right now. Help is standing by. 800-296-1327.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Or in the words of William Shatner, human. I don't think you know, most people know the movie connection to that, which is Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, when he talks about Spock when they killed him off at the end of the movie.
Yeah, Tim managed to jump in there. Yeah, I think I'm glad I'm not the only one to notice that, that the Star Trek effect is the idea that you've only got a certain budget, so you can only, you know, create certain types of aliens. Different species of humans, you know, I'm not the first to come up with that one. I mean, that's a plot line in the X-Files, the idea of changing genetics, modifying genetics, creating genetics. But it does seem as though these beings are already there. I don't think they're purposely engineered to fly the ships or whatever by us, which, of course, is where the X-Files went. I don't think that's the case. I think the alien element's genuine. They are alien, but they're alien in the sense that they're not from this time and place. I think that's probably where that's coming from. Anyway, back to you guys. Go on.
I wanted to start segueing here to your book, because if we're going to look at the American R word, we're going to look at Europe's R word, and I'd like to know where this got started. Can you tell us the background? How did you happen to come across this case?
Okay. Believe it or not, you have actually been going through the book. the previous book to this one, well, two books back, was Crystal Skulls and Human Heads, and that talks about the different species of humans, so that kind of covered that bit of what we've talked about. And then the idea and the concept of them being time travellers, I think that comes up in Europe's Roswell 40 Years Since Impact. I think that's in the conclusion. But yes, the story. Well, the story actually begins in 1983. We think it was in the first few days of the January. So you're talking, you know, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, maybe 4th of January. And something in the middle of the night flew over the farm belonging to a farmer called Earl Evans. And as it did so, it impacted on the top of trees. It cut through the top of a wooded copse. And it took out a swathe of about 20, 25 foot width. It then flew over four fields that were adjacent to the copse, dropping all this metalwork, foil, a couple of other bits and bobs, possibly girders, and then it flew off with all that stuff missing, as I previously said. So Earl comes out the next day, the farmer. He comes out to tend his sheep, and he looks at these fields, and they're just covered in debris. So he does what anybody would do. He phones the police and says, I think I've had a plane crash. What's going on? The police said, oh, okay, leave it with us. We'll have a word with the local Air Force base. We'll see if they know anything. About 2 or 3 hours later, notices that there's a lot of vehicles heading his way. And all this sort of, you know, crash recovery team arrive, and there's police officers, police in uniform, and there's Air Force people there, and Air Force officers. And then Earl notices there's another set of people there that he can't identify dressed in suits. So I'm going to refer to them as the Men in Black, but whatever they are, they're a third department, and they're actually ordering the other people around, even the officers. So this cleanup then starts, and as it starts to go dark, they put up floodlights, because obviously it's winter over here, so it goes dark earlier. And they carry on clearing all this debris. Now, Herbal's a farmer, so he's got to be up the next day to keep the farm going. So somewhere around about midnight, he says, you know, ta-ra to everybody and goes to bed. Anyway, he gets up the following morning, everything's gone. It's just completely cleared. Fast forward a couple of weeks, and there's a newspaper article, and it appears in the Sunday Express on the 23rd of January. Basically, it's entitled Strange Debris Out of the Sky. And the chap who's in charge of the local UFO group is a chap called Gary Rowe, and he subscribes to the local newspaper clipping agency. So he gets this clipping sent to him. This is pre-internet, that type of communication. So he gets this newspaper clipping and he thinks, do you know what, I've got a feeling I know this Earl. So he gets on the phone, phones Earl Evans, and Earl says, yeah, it was me, it was my fields. And Gary says, well, clearly we have to come down and have a look at this, you know, and see what's happened. So they all pile down there, they have a look at the fields, and sure enough, after a really good going over by the UFO group, by Gary and his friends, there's nothing in the fields. Now Gary then looks at this woods, and he says, there's no way, in the middle of the night, that they're going to get all the metal, all the fragments out of this woods. So they dive into the woods, and sure enough, there's a couple of bits of metal stuck in trees, there's a couple of bits on the floor, there's a few bits of foil. It takes them absolutely ages to find the bits that they find. Anyway, they come back again a week or two later. This time they don't find anything at all. They say, okay, we're going to bring back metal detectors and we'll see what we can do. A couple of weeks later, they get a phone call off Earl. And Earl's saying, you're not going to believe this. They're taking away the woods. They're cutting the forest down. So Gary's like, really? Okay, I'll phone the local woodland folks, Forestry Commission, and find out what they're doing. So Gary phones the Forestry Commission, and the guy on the other end says, well, we're clearing the forest because of wind damage. Gary's like, well, do you normally clear woods because of wind damage? The guy at the other end goes, no, but in this case we are. From which Gary then took it to mean that they'd been instructed to, you know, get rid of any possibility of there being any other evidence. So there's two other stories then that follow on from that are quite significant. The first one probably took place some point in February, perhaps drifting into March. And Gary gets a knock on the front door. He gets the bing bong and he goes to open the door and he can see two black figures stood outside the door. So he opens the door, sure enough, two men in black, you know, black suits, black ties, black hats, dark glasses, incomprehensible passes. Gary glances up the close where he lives, and there's two black SUVs there, all the windows blacked out, no number plates. And these two guys just go, oh, we've come for our material. Can we have our metal back, please? And Gary goes, no, you can't. And these guys are like, really? And Gary says, well, what I've done is, he says, I've got a piece of this metal and I've broken it up into small fragments and I've put it into key rings. And he said, there's probably about 100 of these key rings. And he said, I've given them out to everybody I know that is in any way connected to media, television, newspaper, all this sort of thing. And he said, as long as you don't come back here asking for this material ever again, I will not tell these people to release that material to the media. He said, but if you turn up on my doorstep again, that's what I'm going to do. So these guys, quite clearly, absolutely in silence, just nod, walk away, get in the vehicles, and drive away, never to be seen again. Clearly, they're not going to get it all back. It's scattered everywhere. They've got no idea where it is. But that does raise a couple of important questions, even in the stories that I've just shared with you. First of all, how did they know that Gary had been poking around in the woods? How did they know that he'd actually got the metal in the first place? And the second question is, he doesn't even live in the same part of Wales. So how did they find out where he lived and turn up on his front doorstep? So clearly he was being watched and the site was being watched. There's no doubt about that at all. Anyway, the third story, and this is probably the answer to Gene's original question. Fast forward again to 2005, I think it was, 2006. I met Gary at a UFO conference, and we got chatting over a curry afterwards, as you do. And Gary said, oh, I've got this case. You know, you're involved in film and television, which I am. He said, you know, maybe you want to do a documentary on this case. You know, I said, all right, okay, we'll meet up and talk about it. Anyway, we never got round to it for a while, so he phones me up, and he says, how do you fancy doing some archaeology on a UFO crash? Straight away in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, like one of these Spitfires that hits the ground at 600 miles an hour, you know, and kind of embeds itself into the ground. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, fantastic. We'll be digging up this big silver disc, you know, with all this alien stuff and all that. And Gary's like, whoa, no, that's not quite how it is. He said, you know, it came down and he told me the story, and he said, and the ground is all limestone with a light coating of soil. He said, so I'm not sure what you'll find. Well, of course, as an archaeologist, I'm thinking, well, clearly they've hoovered this site clear of everything, you know, knowing what the story was at this point. And then Gary just very casually happens to say, but I've got some fragments in a case in my garage.
We'll look for those fragments in our next fragment. With Mark, Gene, and Tim, you're in.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
If you love mysteries, you'll love these two books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll learn about the strange beings that can look like us, but are not. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll see the hard evidence of UFOs that has been ignored or even hidden. These books will definitely blow your mind, and both are now available on Amazon.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on our distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
So, Mark, this guy has fragments. He used the other F word, fragments.
Yeah, he did.
What happened next?
Well, this is where things get really interesting, because clearly the Men in Black had not recovered the material that he'd found, and he had six pieces of metal and two pieces of foil that he'd managed to get out of this woods, and he'd kept them, he'd put them in a case, he'd locked the case. He doesn't keep the case at home still to this day. He keeps it securely stored in a lockup facility. But he sort of wheeled these pieces out, and he said, look, it's been 25 years since the crash. Why don't we reopen the case? Why don't we do a documentary? So I did a documentary. It's called Europe's Roswell, and it's out there. It's on YouTube. Go to a company called Drake Michigan. You'll be able to find it. So it's digitally remastered. We only put that out in the last few months, including a whole host of other back catalogue material connected to me. So it's out there. You can go and watch it. Anyway, I did it for an American company called Reality Films. They put it to DVD. They circulated it, and, you know, we expected a fairly large response to this, you know, because we've actually got pieces of this, you know. And the total response was, well, pretty much zero. I think I got one phone call from an American station that wanted an interview, and they never followed it up. So that just amazed everybody, you know. So the documentary, I think, finished up on Amazon. Amazon Prime, I think, was where it ended up. And it's been watched quite solidly by a lot of people since 2008 when it was released. And then, of course, now I'm working with a publisher called Philip Mantle. And Philip's, you know, finger on the pulse. He's far bigger in ufology than I'll ever be. He's an amazing guy. And he just very nonchalantly said, you know, well, I've put a couple of books out for you now. And he said, one's Archaeoscience and the other one's about King Arthur. He said, why don't we do one on flying saucers? Since that's what I actually publish, let's do one of those. So he said, it's 40 years since the original crash, so let's try and get this book out this year, 2023. So we did. We had it ready for the beginning of the year. And it's kind of show and tell. It's got loads of photographs in there, the best quality ones we could find. It's got at least two stories of how I got involved with UFOs, because, you know, I saw some when I was a teenager in the 70s, and I saw another one in 1980s. So I'm a witness, and dozens of other encounters while we've been on archaeological sites and what have you, things whizzing overhead and bobbing around in the sky. And I've obviously been in that community, a part of that community for many years, so all that sort of information's gone in there, and most of it's new. I don't think anybody's really covered any of the stories in any detail before. And then, of course, there was the making of the DVD originally, so pretty much everything I've told you up to this point, that's summarised in there in a very sort of punchy way. It's an easy read. And then, good old Philip, right at the 11th hour, says, "I wonder if Gary would agree to get this material analysed." And I'm like, well, no, I don't think he'll do that. He's really protective of his material. I really don't think he's, you know, he's on board, but I don't think he's that much on board. So Philip said, well, why don't I try? Why don't I, you know, send him an email? So he did. I didn't really get any response back from Gary, so, you know, we thought, well, nothing's going to happen. And a few days later, we got three samples in a jiffy bag. Phillips came whizzing in the post. I think it was something like September or October, at which point we're all panicking, because by this point, the release date for the book's the 1st of November. So the story takes another enormous step forward. Do you want me to go into the analysis?
Well, you know what? That's, of course, the closer here. What was the analysis? What happened?
Well, to be honest with you, we already had one set of results, because back in the 1980s, independent of anything else, Gary had friends in the aerospace industry. He had a couple of ladies that built planes. He had a couple of fellas that were in the science departments. But he had one contact that worked for British Aerospace, which was particularly significant, because over here, they're the guys that deal with the military. They make pretty much everything. So he managed to get a piece of this informally. He did this because it would have cost thousands of pounds back then to actually analyse it. And managed to get a piece of this into British Aerospace. And he got a report back, probably 10, 11, 12 pages of stuff. And the gist of what it said is, we haven't actually analysed this. We've done several other tests on it, and we've looked at it visually, and we think it's a piece of duralumin. Now, duralumin at that point is not unusual, because it's been used in fighter aircraft and airships and goodness knows what else. It goes all the way back to the First World War. So duralumin is also a trade name as well. It's a bit like Coca-Cola or McDonald's or whatever. There's 200 different varieties of duralumin. So while it's a step forward, it's not a particularly big one, but we already had that. We had that piece of information. So we're calling that the UK tests. That was the UK tests that were done on the material. Anyway, back to Philip again. Philip says, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll split the material, we'll send some of it to a lab in Australia, and we'll send some of it to a lab in the USA, and we'll see what happens, and we'll mark it urgent. Hopefully we'll get this back before the book's due to be published. So anyway, a couple of weeks pass, and the analysis from Australia comes back. Pretty much the first thing it says, this material is not duralumin. Okay, what is it then? So you carry on going through the report. It's aluminium, and it's aluminium foam. At which point, none of us had the foggiest idea what aluminium foam was. And it turns out what you can do is you can get aluminium to react, and it sort of foams up, if you like, and then goes hard at room temperature. And it's extremely light, extremely durable, and quite adaptable. And again, they've been doing this for a while, and the Australians also said, oh, and by the way, the grey resin substance that you've got on this metal, we think it's this particular type of American glue. So we don't think it's one of theirs, we think it's one of ours. At which point we're like, well, that's pretty much sunk that one then. And then the American report comes back, literally a matter of a couple of days later. You open the American report, and right at the very beginning it says, substance unknown. Oh, we're like, oh no, where are we going with this? And you look at the analysis, and it's 94.6% lanthium or lanthanum. And again, that's another one of those things where you go, what on earth is that? Anyway, lanthium, turns out, is something like number 27 as the most common material on planet Earth. So it's kind of up there with things like, you know, basalt and quartz and mud and everything else. It's everywhere. But it's just incredibly difficult to extract it because it's so scattered. But it's also in comets, meteorites, the universe, the upper atmosphere, galaxies, as well as everywhere on planet Earth. So it's what they call an exotic metal, not because it's particularly rare, but because it is so difficult to extract. So at this point, we're looking at the two samples, and we realise that the sample that went to Australia is a thin sheet with green non-aerodynamic paint on it, because we know that from the original British Aerospace Report. The stuff that went to America is fractionally thicker. It's got the same kind of resin on one side, but on the other side, it's got these rubbery green hexagons all over it. Both labs failed to properly identify either the rubbery green hexagons, the paint, or this grey resin, because it certainly isn't an American glue, because, of course, the American lab would have known exactly what it was. And it's also not duralumin. So you've now got these two substances. You've got aluminium foam, which, as far as we know, did not exist in the late 70s, early 80s. And then you've got this other substance, lanthium or lanthanum, which was covering four fields, and some of the sheets were 6 foot square. They were 2 meter square sheets of this stuff. That is literally billions of dollars of extracted lanthium at today's prices. And again, it's not a substance that was known to exist. In fact, it's still not a substance that's admitted to exist in use in aerospace. It's completely alien. Nobody knows what it is or where it comes from. It's just bizarre. So now it's gone back the other way. You know, there's me and the publisher chatting to each other going, well, yes, you know, we'll get the results back and this will nail it. This will put a stop to it all. You know, we'll solve the mystery with this analysis. And no, it's gone the opposite way. We've just fallen further down the rabbit hole because we've got material that shouldn't have existed being used in a way that it shouldn't have been used at a time and at an expense that is, well, pretty much beyond us. Even today, it's difficult to, you know, be able to do what that ship clearly did. And then you've still got other mysteries like, where the hell did it go?
Before we find out what's going on, like a song, what's going on? We've got Mark, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to see one, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care.
Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.